Before we begin today, a brief warning. Contents may be disturbing and language may be explicit and inappropriate for young listeners, so listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Murderers and Monsters, guys. This is Marie.
Hey, hey, it's Shelby.
So today we've got, it's my turn, and we've got a story for you today that's back from the 70s. This story actually is what really piqued my interest in the whole true crime genre, and it's been one of the ones that I've been most fascinated about. So I decided that this week I would do Ed Kemper. So on August the 27th of 1964, at the age of 15, Ed Kemper was sitting in the kitchen with his grandmother when they had an argument. Enraged, Kemper stormed off and retrieved a rifle that his grandfather had given him for hunting. The rifle had been confiscated because he had used it to needlessly shoot animals. He then reentered the kitchen and fatally shot his grandmother in the head before firing twice more into her back.
Oh, gosh.
When Kemper's grandfather returned from the grocery store, Kemper went outside and fatally shot him in the driveway next to his car. He was unsure of what to do next, so he called his mother, who told him to contact the police department. Ed did so and waited to be taken into custody. After his arrest, Kemper said that he, quote, just wanted to see what it felt like to kill grandma, unquote.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dark.
Mm-hmm. And then testified that he killed his grandfather so that he would not have to find out that his wife was dead, and that he would be angry at Kemper for what he'd done. Kemper's crimes were deemed incomprehensible for a 15-year-old to commit, and court psychiatrists diagnosed him with paranoid schizophrenia. He was sent to Atascadero State Hospital, a maximum security facility in San Luis Obispo County that houses mentally ill convicts. At Atascadero, California Youth Authority, psychiatrists and social workers disagreed with the court with the court's psychiatrist diagnosis. The report stated that Kemper showed no flight of ideas, no interference with thought, no expression of delusions or hallucinations, and no evidence of bizarre thinking. They also observed him to be intelligent and introspective. Initial testing measured his IQ at 136, which is extremely high, in case you didn't mm-hmm. know.
Yeah.
Over two standard deviations above average is what they said about his IQ. Kemper was re-diagnosed with a less severe condition, a personality trait disturbance, passive-aggressive type. Later on in his time at Atascadero, he was given another IQ test, which gave an even higher result of 145. During the time he was there, Kemper endeared himself to his psychiatrists by being a model prisoner. He was trained to administer, get this now, he was trained to administer psychiatric tests to other inmates.
What?
Yeah. They trained him to actually give psychiatric tests to other inmates in the hospital.
I actually did not know that.
Yes, ma'am. He endeared himself so much to them and was like a model prisoner, was like on his absolute best behavior to the point. But he was so damn smart, though.
Yeah.
That's that to me, that's he was manipulative to me.
Yeah.
In what I know. But yeah, he was actually. Yeah, he was
that kindness to his advantage, basically.
Right. And he was actually able to test other inmates. It just boggles my mind. A psychiatrist later said he was a very good worker, and this was not typical of a sociopath. He really took pride in his work. Well, yeah, I guess he did.
Wow.
I mean, if you're able to administer tests,
that's one way to put it, I guess.
It's one way to describe it.
Yeah.
So on December the 18th of 1969, this was Kemper's 21st birthday. He was released on parole from Atascadero against the recommendations of the psychiatrists at the hospital. He was actually released back into the care of his mother. She was then residing in Aptos, California. It was a short drive from where she worked as an administrative assistant at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Kemper later demonstrated further to his psychiatrists that he was rehabilitated, and on November the 29th of 1972, his juvenile records were permanently expunged.
Hmm.
He killed two people.
And that it was just gone.
and they wiped his record.
I mean, I know this was a different time, but that still is.
That's a lot. I mean, I understand he was 15 years old, but he killed his grandparents.
Right.
In cold blood. Okay. But anyway, so the last report from his probation psychiatrists read, and I quote, "If I were to see this patient without having any history available or getting any history from him, I would think that we're dealing with a very well-adjusted young man who had initiative, intelligence, and who was free of any psychiatric illnesses. It is my opinion that he has made a very excellent response to the years of treatment and rehabilitation, and I would see no psychiatric reason to consider him to be of any danger to himself or to any member of society. And since it may allow him more freedom as an adult to develop his potential, I would consider it reasonable to have a permanent expungement of his juvenile record," end quote.
Wow.
I'm going to bet that later on down the line, when the dude that said this found out what Ed was actually capable of and what happened.
Right.
I bet he was sorry he said that.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't know. I mean, to not see any of that as any kind of threat. I mean, he killed two people, not just random people. He killed his grandparents. And I mean, that, I don't know.
It's very, it's very disturbing to me, because I understand that your mind, and you know as well as I do, the things we have researched and stuff like that, and especially with the field of study that you're going into. We understand that the mind is not fully developed up into like the mid 20s, maybe even possibly 30, depending on the person that you're talking about. So I get that at 15 years old, you know, they're trying to give him a chance. I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, they kept him from 15 to 21. And he just, I mean, he displayed reasonable behavior. But that to me goes back to what we've discussed before about, yeah, they're going to display those certain behaviors because they're in a facility.
They want to get out.
Right. They're in a facility where they don't have any choice.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
And I don't see how any of that could depict how his mind may go like, oh, I don't want to kill anybody else or unalive anybody else.
Yeah, I don't. I don't see that.
It's kind of, I mean, it's not the same, but, you know, this concept where people say, you know, once a cheater, always a cheater kind of thing.
Right.
You know,
yes.
It's the same concept here. Mm-hmm. You know,
I agree.
You unalive some people, and these were people that were relatives of you.
That were supposed to be people you loved and that loved you.
So if you had no remorse for unaliving them, then that tells me somebody random off the street, probably not going to have much remorse for them either.
I'm just saying.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how this pans out for him.
Okay. Right.
So while staying with his mother, Kemper attended community college in accordance with his parole requirements, and he hoped to become a police officer, though he was rejected because of his size. At the time of his release from Atascadero, Kemper stood 6'9" tall and was about 286 pounds, which led to his nickname, Big Ed.
Yeah, well, he's freaking huge.
Yes, he is. There ain't no denying that.
You have to look up at him. No matter,
and
I mean,
up and up and up.
I know.
Yeah.
That's just so crazy to me.
He was
6'9" and over 200 pounds. I mean.
Yeah. He's a big boy. So, although he was rejected from joining the force, Kemper maintained relationships with the Santa Cruz police officers. They described him. I know, right? They described him as, you know, Big Ed, just, you know, one of their friends, whatever. And they all hung out at a bar called the Jury Room. It was a popular hangout for cops. And that's where they all just, you know, kind of like got together and chilled and drank together. So Kemper worked a series of menial jobs before gaining employment with the State of California Division of Highways. During this time, his relationship with his mother remained toxic and hostile, the two having frequent arguments that their neighbors often overheard. Kemper later described the arguments that he had with his mother. They had some really big blowouts. I mean, they never did really get along. She was overbearing. She was mean. And this is all things that we hear after the fact, because we don't actually get to hear Clarinelle's side of the story. Clarinelle was his mom. But they were, it was said that they had some horrific battles.
Mm.
So when he had saved enough money, Kipper actually moved out with his friend in Alameda, California. He often had financial difficulties, which resulted in his frequently returning to his mother's home in Aptos. So we're going to move on to May the 7th of 1972. Kipper was driving in Berkeley when he picked up two 18-year-olds hitchhiking. They were from Fresno State University, Marianne Pesci and Anita Mary Lucchesa, with the pretense of taking them to Stanford University. After driving for about an hour, he managed to reach a secluded wooded area near Alameda, with which he was familiar with from his work at the highway department, without alerting his passengers that he had changed directions from where they wanted to go. It was there that he handcuffed Pesci and locked Lucchesa in the trunk, and then stabbed and strangled Pesci to death, subsequently killing Lucchesa in a similar manner.
So was this his first killing after his grandparents?
It was, yes. He killed his grandparents, let me see, in 64 at the age of 15. So this was actually in 1972. He'd already been to the hospital and got out and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So this
I wonder if it was like a craving, or if it was like just feeling of anger, maybe. Maybe he wanted to take out some rage. I just wonder why it was that he went so long. Other than, I mean, I know he was in the hospital, but
yeah,
just interesting.
I think it was something to do with the fact that him and his mother fought all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that he just internally and mentally couldn't deal with. And I'm wondering if that's like part of the mental thing,
like what set him
that
off.
Pushed him. Mm-hmm. They just kept pushing him and pushing him and pushing him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Every time I've ever heard of his story, it just always baffled me about how smart this guy was, or is, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And just what he was capable of.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Absolutely. I mean, it's crazy. It really is. Okay. So, he put both of the women's bodies in the trunk of his Ford Galaxy and returned to his apartment. He was stopped on the way by a police officer for having a broken taillight, but the officer, he didn't detect the corpses in the car. I mean, why would you? You know what I'm saying? I mean, why would that even be a thought in your mind?
I guess
at that
he
point?
For them to have been stabbed, though, don't you think there would have been blood on the back of the car?
Well, he stabbed him
sleeping
outside
out?
Of the car. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that you raise a good point, but
like, see, you know, because I mean, I don't know how, maybe he had them wrapped up in something.
Yeah.
Because I'd imagine they'd still be bleeding out unless he just let them bleed out. I don't know. That's
I don't
just
know.
Interesting.
But for whatever reason,
grabbing them, you know, and maybe handprints, lifting up, open the trunk or something.
Right. I mean, there could have been any number of things, but apparently this cop just didn't see anything at this point. So, Kemper's roommate, when he wasn't at home, when he got there, so he took the bodies into the apartment where he photographed and had sexual intercourse with the naked corpses before dismembering them.
Ugh.
He then put the body parts into plastic bags, which he later abandoned near Loma Prieta Mountain, before disposing of Pesci and Lucchesa's severed heads in a ravine. Kemper engaged in, I've never heard this word before, but I'm going to have to say this word because I was so stunned and intrigued. And I know that sounds like a bad way to describe it, but anyway, you'll see what I'm saying. Okay, so he engaged in irrematio. Have you ever heard that word? I know you got a sick look on your face.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a form of forced oral sex.
Yeah.
So
with their heads,
mm-hmm.
man.
Both,
I mean,
of them.
Listen, so there ain't a lot of things that give me the ick when it comes to true crime, because I mean, it's stuff that at some point in time in my life I will get to investigate things like that, so I kind of have to just swallow it. But necrophilia is just one of those things that I can't get past. I mean, it's just,
That's beyond
just
to me.
The thought of that. I mean, it just gives me the ick.
Yep, absolutely. I'm 100% behind you on that.
And then especially, I mean, I couldn't imagine.
I mean, after dismembering the bodies, you saved the heads, and then that's what you did.
Yeah.
Okay. In August of that year, Pesci's skull was found in Loma Prieta Mountain. An extensive search failed to turn up the rest of Pesci's remains or any trace of Lucchesa. On the evening of September the 14th of 1972, Kemper picked up a 15-year-old dance student named Akia Koo, who had decided to hitchhike to a dance class after missing her bus. He again drove to a remote area where he pulled a gun on Koo before accidentally locking himself out of the car. However, she let him back inside despite the fact that the gun was still in the car. Once she let him back in, he proceeded to choke her unconscious, rape her, and kill her. Now you,
I would have been so gone. No, you ain't missing the kid back in this car. You out.
I know, right? But
were the
this
keys
poor
in
little,
it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would have been
peace.
See ya. Too big. You can't hit him with the car. But you know, I would have been gone.
Right. You'd have.
I'm making a beeline straight to the police station.
You'd have disabled the damn car. You'd have hit him. Yeah. But yeah, and I know y'all. Please don't misunderstand our laughter with this. It's just incredulous laughter that this poor baby was so confused and didn't understand what was going on to the fact that she let him back in, not knowing that he was fixing to hurt her.
Right.
Because she was just 15 years old. You know what I mean?
I mean, and at this point California, I know that there were like a lot of other things going on around this time frame, you know, so I'm sure that there had been some awareness brought to her attention at least, but she probably in that moment wasn't thinking like, oh, this guy's just probably giving me a ride. I mean, she might have noticed the gun, but maybe it was just for like a protection purpose or something, you know, probably never even crossed her mind that he was going to hurt her.
Right. And during, it's just like what you were just saying, during this time, there was another serial killer that was on the loose in the same area that was doing a lot of, not the same crimes as Kemper, but more messy and more varied crimes at the same time that this was happening with Kemper as well. So the police force, yes, they had, I mean, a lot of people were aware of what was going on, and it was like freaking them all out because this is Santa Cruz. It was supposed to be like a little small sleepy town. This is where people moved to get away from the big cities and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, like everything just blew up. Like it was one thing after another, after another, after another. And Kemper's,
I mean, it'd be like something like that happening in this area where we're at. You know, like you just don't hear about stuff like that. I'd imagine it's probably the same thing.
Right. And then all of it happening like back to back to back to back to back. You know what I mean? So although they were aware of it, and they told all of the college students, don't go with anybody who doesn't have a parking permit to be at the university. But because Kemper's mom worked at the university on the campus, he was able to get a sticker. And that's one of the ways that he was able to lure these girls into the car by thinking that he was not a threat.
Yeah. So. And, you know, just to comment a little further, it's interesting because those first two girls, he stabbed them. And then in this case, he choked her and then he had the gun. I don't know what he proceeded to do with that. But it's just interesting to me that almost his MO was changing.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know what they say about serial killers. As they go along, a lot of them advance, they get better, evolve. That's the word. Thank you. But yeah, so Kemper subsequently packed Koo's body into the trunk of his car and went to a nearby bar to have a few drinks and then returned to his apartment. Back at his apartment, he had sexual intercourse with the corpse, then dismembered and disposed of the remains in a similar manner as his previous two victims.
Wow.
It was so sad because her mom called the police and reported her disappearance because she hadn't heard from her. She couldn't get in touch with her or whatever. And she actually went out and put up hundreds of flyers asking for information, but she didn't receive any responses regarding her daughter's location or status. Like even the police didn't know anything and they didn't help her. I'm not saying they didn't help her on purpose, but they couldn't help her. I mean, it was like she was all alone looking for her baby. And that's so sad to me.
That hurts me to think about.
So on January the 7th of 1973, Kemper, who had moved back in with his mother at this time, was driving around the Cabrillo College campus when he picked up an 18-year-old student, Cynthia Ann Cindy Shaw. He drove to a wooded area and fatally shot her with a 22 caliber pistol. He then placed her body in the trunk of his car, drove to his mother's house where he kept her body hidden in a closet in his room overnight. Then, when his mother left for work the next morning, he had sexual intercourse with her, removed the bullet from her corpse, and then dismembered and decapitated her in his mother's bathtub.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. It
Ugh.
is said that Kemper kept Cindy's severed head for several days, regularly engaging in sexual activity with it, and then buried it in his mother's garden, facing upward toward his mother's bedroom. He said,
Creepy.
yeah, he said that he did that because his mom always wanted people to look up to her.
I'm
So.
pretty sure that's not what she meant by that, you know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it wasn't, but yeah, so that's what he said. And I mean, you have to take everything as far as the quotes and stuff like that that I have from him. You have to take all this with a little grain of salt because although he was extremely smart and very, very eloquent when he spoke, and I'm not saying that in a nice way, I'm just saying that that's what he sounded like because I listened to an interview that I'm going to link on our show notes that came from Spotify. It's like an hour and 15-minute interview with Ed Kemper, and like he talks 98% of the time, and he's very well spoken, extremely well spoken.
Like honestly,
So,
if reading up about him other before you get to like the murders and everything that he's committed, when you just read about how he is just so smart and how he speaks, you would never link the two together.
You wouldn't think
You
so. I mean,
know, it's not something that you wouldn't think of him as a threat.
Right.
Aside from all the stuff that he's done, like if you just take that out and just look at everything else, I mean, you just think that he's just some smart dude.
Yeah, he's extremely well spoken, and it makes me sad to be able to sit there and listen to him and think, wow, what a waste.
Somebody like this really
I mean, what a
committed all these
waste.
acts.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, ugh. Anyway. So he discarded the rest of Cindy's remains by throwing them off of a cliff. Over the course of the following few weeks, all except Cindy's head and right hand were discovered, and they were pieced together like a puzzle. A pathologist determined that Cindy had been cut into pieces with a power saw. So on February the 5th of 1973, after a heated argument with his mother, that right there, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt myself, but that right there, see, every time he gets into an argument with his mother, every time they're together, it's like a catalyst. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
It's what triggers him almost.
absolutely, absolutely. It's like she sets the fire and that wick to that bomb just it starts burning and it just blows up. You know what I mean? Ugh.
And I
Anyway.
mean, I don't know what the extent of their arguments were or what it was that they were even fighting about ever.
Well, she was,
But
go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, it's just I'm pretty sure you can find a different way to channel that anger.
Well, I mean, this goes all the way back to his childhood because she would constantly berate him. She was horrible to him. She treated him different than his sisters. He had two sisters. One was older and one was younger. She treated him extremely different from his sisters. He was a 9-pound baby. First of all, she's been pissed off since that happened. I'm just going to go ahead and tell y'all right now. But yeah, so I mean, she was always mean to him, always putting down all that kind of stuff. So it was from childhood on that she treated him this way. I'm not making excuses for him. I'm not trying to make her out to be the bad person. Wasn't there. Don't know how it was. We just know the stories that we've been told since then. The research that other people have done, the research that we have done, and stuff like that. But it just seems to be a catalyst every time him and his mom get into a fight. So anyway, so he'd been in an argument with his mom. excuse me, he left the house in search of possible victims. With heightened suspicion of serial killers being With heightened suspicion of a serial killer preying on hitchhikers in the Santa Cruz area, students had been advised to accept rides only from cars with university stickers, like I had said before. And Kemper was able to obtain a sticker. He encountered 23-year-old Rosalind Heather Thorpe and 20-year-old Alice Helen Allison Lou. They called her Allison. On the USC campus. Kemper pulled up and Thorpe entered the car first, reassuring Lou that it was also safe to enter. He first fatally shot Thorpe and then Lou with his pistol and wrapped their bodies in blankets. Kemper again brought his victims back to his mother's house. This time he beheaded them in his car and carried the headless corpses into his mother's house to have sexual intercourse with them.
Okay, I know that had to leave some kind of blood trail, though. You cut them off in your car?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it had to be like a bathtub of blood in the trunk, right?
It had to be, right? After all of this, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't care if there's a blanket or not. I mean, the human body itself has a lot of blood in it, okay?
It's like, what is it, like 5 quarts, 6 quarts of blood?
I mean, it's a lot.
It's a lot of blood. So at this point they had to be swimming in it back there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Anyway.
And it had to have a smell. You'll never be able to get the smell out. I don't care how much you clean.
No, absolutely. You ain't never going to be able to get none of that out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, he then dismembered the bodies, removed the bullets to prevent identification, and discarded their remains the next morning. Some remains were found at Eden Canyon a week later, and more were found near Route 1 in March. So that was February the 5th. We're moving on to April the 20th of 1973. Kemper was coming home from a party, and his 52-year-old mother was awakened by his arrival. While she was sitting in her bed reading a book, she noticed Ed enter her room and said to him, quote, "I suppose you're going to sit up all night and talk now," end quote. He said, "No, good night."
Interesting.
That makes me wonder what kind of dynamic they had. You know what I'm saying? Were there times when they were okay with each other?
Yeah.
Why would she think that he would want to sit up and talk all night? You know what I mean?
Right.
Did
he have a look on his face where it seemed like maybe he needed to talk?
Right.
Did you know? Why would if you're around, I mean, this was mother and son. So, I mean, like, if you're around somebody enough, like you, I know, you know, hey, you all right? You know, I could tell by the look on your face sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's just like that night whenever you had Doug answer me on your phone. You remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah, right.
I know how you talk to me. I know how we interact with each other. So when he texts me back with no, and that was it, I was
something was wrong.
Something is not right here. Because we know how each other are. You know what I'm saying?
Pick up certain cues and everything. So was there something about his appearance, something about his demeanor that just left it to be like, you know, maybe something's up? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. So, and that just put a question in my head, is like, why would she even say that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, he then waited for her to fall asleep. Then he snuck back into her room to bludgeon her with a claw hammer and slit her throat with a penknife. Kemper then beheaded her. And as stated in the 1984 interview, he stated that he put her head on a shelf and screamed at it for an hour, threw darts at it, and ultimately smashed her face in. He also cut out her tongue and larynx and put them in a garbage disposal. However, the garbage disposal could not break down the tough vocal cords and ejected the tissue back into the sink. Quote, "That seemed appropriate as much as she'd bitched and screamed and yelled at me over so many years," end quote. Mm-hmm. I wish I could see her. She's sitting there with her eyes wide, with her hand over her mouth, like, what?
That's wild. I mean, that just shows you how much he just absolutely despised her, though.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Kemper hid his mother's corpse in a closet, and he went to get a drink at a nearby bar. Upon his return to the house, he invited his mother's friend Sally Howlett over to have dinner and watch a movie. When she arrived, Kemper strangled her to death, to create a cover story that his mother and Sally had gone away together on a vacation. He subsequently put Hallett's corpse in the closet to obscure any outward signs of a disturbance. Afterward, Kemper fled the scene. He drove nonstop to Pueblo, Colorado, taking caffeine pills to stay awake for over the 1,000-mile car ride. He had three guns and hundreds of rounds of ammunition in his car, and he believed that he was actually the target of an active manhunt. But after not hearing any news on the radio about the murders of his mother and Sally, when he arrived in Pueblo, he found a phone booth and called the police. He confessed to the murders of his mother and Sally, but police didn't take his call seriously. They told him to just call back later.
What?
Yeah. So he was really good friends with all the police and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. So they were like, oh, he's just joking. I mean, this is just Big Ed, you know, stop it. You know what I'm saying? Now, like, they didn't take him seriously because they didn't really believe that he could actually do that kind of thing because that was his persona. You know what I mean? He made everybody believe that he was just major. Hold on. I'm sorry, y'all.
Stop it.
My dog's rolling around the floor acting crazy. But
master manipulator.
Yes, he was. And nobody believed that. Thanks. Get off. I'm sorry. But yeah, so he had made all these people believe that he was the person that he was portraying to them. You know what I mean? It's like you said, master manipulator.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, several hours later, Kemper called back again, and he actually asked to speak to an officer that he personally knew that was on the police force. He confessed to that officer about killing his mother and Sally. And then he told him, he was like, look, y'all need to come get me because I'm feeling that urge again. And they went to his house, found his mom and Sally's body and all that kind of stuff. So they raced to where he was at, took him into custody, all that kind of stuff. So they finally believed him. Whenever they got to him and took him into custody, they talked to him and was like, what's going on? And he just like had word vomit. He confessed to all the murders. He confessed to the murder of the six students, all that kind of stuff. He was like, blah, and just said everything.
So I'm just kind of curious, though,
mm-hmm.
because obviously we know he was rather smart, but I wonder why it is that he had to kill so many people and then kill his mother before he finally decided to turn himself in. Was it she was a target all along and he had to build up to get there?
I think that right there, what you just said, is absolutely exactly what happened.
You know, I mean, maybe he just couldn't do that because it's his mother. Maybe he was fighting these battles in his head and was like, you know, you can't do this. Like this, you know, you fight. And then maybe they did have some form of a relationship where they did talk and share feelings at times, maybe. And maybe, I don't know, that's just interesting because to sit there and just call, hey, look, I'm feeling the urge to unalive somebody. Come get me. Come pick me up right now.
Right.
After you've done all of what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
That's just interesting.
It is. And I do believe that in his way, he loved his mom. And he was seeking approval from her for mm-hmm. so long. And their relationship was so toxic. And it was just so oil and water for so long that it's like what you said. I feel like it was probably the girls that he unalived before he actually went to Major. Stop it. Major, stop. I'm sorry. But before he finally got to that point, maybe they were, for lack of a better word, and y'all please forgive me, I don't mean this in a bad way, a trial run. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because every time they would get in an argument, he would go out and find somebody. Then they'd get in an argument again. He'd go out and find somebody else. Then they'd get in an argument again. He'd go out and find somebody else. To the point to where finally that night, he just couldn't, he couldn't take it anymore.
So just out of curiosity,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what his victims looked like. Did they resemble his mother in any way?
No.
No.
But they did resemble each other. Excuse me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So well, he had a type of some sort.
Well, back in the 70s, the type was pretty much, excuse me, dark hair. I mean, of course, there were blondes out there too. I think Cindy was, she had a little bit lighter hair, but most of his victims were dark haired, parted down the middle, almost a Ted Bundy-ish kind of look. You know what I'm saying? And they were all very pretty. Akiyaku, she was dark haired as well, but hers was a little bit on the wavy side. I'll put a lot of pictures up of all these things on our Facebook group and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I think he did in his own way. Maybe he didn't even know it, but no, they didn't resemble his mom in any way.
I was just curious.
Yeah. You would think so.
Well,
yeah.
Well, and just the, like this last week I studied up on different illnesses and everything. And a lot of times when somebody reacts to a certain situation, it's because of a trigger of some sort. So in this case, I was thinking that we know that his mom triggered a lot of these feelings, a lot of this just sudden urge of just rage. And I would just assume that he would go after somebody that resembled her in some way.
Right. Reminded him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Kemper was indicted on 8 counts of first degree murder on May the 7th of 1973. Due to Kemper's explicit and detailed confession, his counsel's only option was to plead not guilty by reason of insanity to the charges. Kemper twice tried to commit suicide while he was in custody. Fun fact, I was listening to the, fun fact, you know what I mean. I was listening to the interview with him today when he spoke in his own words. And there were two different times that he tried to kill himself. Take a guess as to what he used to try to kill himself both times.
What?
You're never going to guess. An ink pen. He broke and sharpened an ink pen two different times to try to cut his wrists and kill himself.
Interesting.
My question is, how y'all not going to know he's got an ink pen? Because those things weren't allowed then. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're allowed to have, even when I was in jail, you were allowed to have, you've seen the inside of an ink pen. You know, the little ink cartridge, the little plastic round tube that has the ink in it. And then just the little bitty tiny metal piece that goes on the end that actually has the ball that lets you write. That's all you get. You can't do nothing with that, right?
Yeah.
But somehow he got an actual ink pen into the jail to be able to do this. You know, I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
So his trial went ahead on October the 23rd of 1973. Three court-appointed psychiatrists actually found Kemper to be legally sane. On November the 1st, Kemper took the stand. He testified that he killed the victims because he wanted them for himself, like possessions.
And he threw them away like trash.
Yeah.
Just disposed of them like they meant absolutely nothing. I mean, these were people.
Right.
Women that had a whole future ahead of them.
Had families, had loved ones, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. He also attempted to convince the jury that he was insane based on the reasoning that his actions could have been committed only by someone with an aberrant mind. He stated that two beings inhabited his body, and that when the killer personality took over, it was, quote, kind of like blacking out, unquote. I don't know how many times we've heard in how many different episodes or how much different research that we've done that people want to cop to that. Oh, it wasn't me. It was the person inside of me. I don't know what happened. I blacked out. I can't even recall how many times I've heard that crap.
Yeah, or like the movie Split. I can't think of the guy's name now right off the top of my head, but where he had like 24 personalities within him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just those things are true. It can happen. However, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's a piece inside of you that ignites when you are triggered. I mean, it's just that it is what it is. You committed it. You did it. You knew what you were doing in this time frame. And if you didn't realize it then, you knew when you pulled the body out of the trunk.
Well, and with going along the same lines of what we're just talking about as far as split personalities and things like that, I know that a lot of people, look, the human mind is an amazing, phenomenally crazy thing.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And I'm not saying that there's not people out here who have been through so much trauma and so many different situations that their mind has not fractured. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that at all. I believe that it is possible 100%. And my heart goes out to those people because I can't imagine how you live. Look, it's hard for me to live with me, let alone two or three different people inside of here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, I believe that with that being said, a lot of people try to use that as a cop out as well.
Yeah.
So that's, that's, yeah, he was so smart. I believe that that was a way for him to try to kind of push it off. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So on November the 8th of 1973, the 6-man, 6-woman jury deliberated for 5 hours before declaring Kemper sane and guilty on all counts. He asked for the death penalty, requesting, quote, death by torture, end quote. Yeah. Mm-hmm. However, with a moratorium placed on capital punishment by the Supreme Court of California, he instead received 7 years to life for each count, with these terms to be served concurrently, and was sentenced to the California Medical Facility in Vacaville. Tell me what part of that sentence that I just read makes me insane.
The 7 years to life.
Sweet baby Jesus. That make. Anyway, we're going to move on because that makes me want to rip my eyes out. So shortly after arriving at the California Medical Facility in 1973, Kemper was admitted to psychiatrists for reevaluation. He was re-diagnosed with antisocial, narcissistic, and schizotypal personality disorders. I've never heard that word before. I thought it was schizotypical, but that's not the way it's spelled. I may be pronouncing it wrong. Sorry if I am.
Well, I think some of those diagnoses,
mm-hmm.
I actually just learned about the DSM-5 this week. So
tell me about it.
So the DSM-5, it is like a database that is used for like doctors, psychiatrists, somebody to diagnose somebody properly with an illness of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And within that, there's so many different symptoms and similarities and different things like anxiety, depression, like they share so many of the same symptoms. So I think after time of reevaluating and everything, they dropped off some of those terms.
Yeah.
And it's used because you want to make sure that you're coded right. So like you, if you're receiving some type of medication or whatever, you don't want to be taking something for schizophrenia when you have amnesia. I don't know. That probably doesn't even make sense, but you know, just for reference, it has nothing to do with each other, you know?
Right.
So you want to make sure you have the right diagnosis. So that's what that's used for. But
okay.
I don't think that they use that term anymore. I think it's probably something different. I could be wrong, but.
Well, I've heard a bunch of different terms, and I know the antisocial, I understand the narcissistic, I understand personality disorders, I understand all that, but
but that one is different.
It's schizotypal, schizotypal. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with that one. That one kind of threw me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, in the California Medical Facility, Kemper was incarcerated in the same prison block as other notorious criminals such as Herbert Mullen and Charles Manson. Now, we all know who Charles Manson is, but Herbert Mullen was actually the other serial killer who was operating at the same time that Kemper was. The other murders and things like that, that to begin with, they were clumping all together, were actually Herbert Mullen and Ed Kemper. It was two different ones that were operating at the same time.
How crazy would that have been in that time to be a part of, where there are two active serial killers within the same range of each other? I mean, that would be insane. I mean, and even if you didn't know anything about this other one, you were only under the assumption that there was one.
Right. Doing all this.
Yeah.
at the same time.
I couldn't imagine.
Mm-mm, I couldn't either. And you know, I did a TikTok last night. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
Yeah.
On the how many active serial killers there are, at any given time in the United States or even worldwide. But I did a little bit of research last night on it, and I can get one all the way up to like 2014. But as far as them naming active serial killers who are operating at this particular point in time, I couldn't find anybody. So I'm kind of confused on how you're going to say that there's 40 to 50 operating at any given time and then not tell me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But we kind of need to know this. I mean,
I'd be interested in the information. Thanks.
Yeah. So if anybody knows, could you release that, please?
Could you give it? Yeah. Could you give your girls a heads up? I'm just saying.
Yeah. Look, we ready for an apocalypse. I mean, I'm just saying.
Like, I just need a heads up, bro. I'm good. Just give me like you know, give you girls a shout. So, Kemper remains among the general population in prison, and is considered a model prisoner. He was in charge of, God Almighty, get ready. He was in charge of scheduling other inmates' appointments with psychiatrists, and was an accomplished craftsman of ceramic cups. He was also a prolific narrator of audiobooks for a charity program.
Children's books, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I'm
ma'am.
I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
That part drives me nuts. Nuts.
Yeah. Audiobooks for a charity program that prepared material for the visually impaired. In 1987, Los Angeles Times article stated that he was the coordinator of the prison's program and had personally spent over 5,000 hours narrating books with several hundred completed recordings to his name. He was retired from these positions in 2015 after he experienced a stroke and was declared medically disabled. He received his first rules violation report in 2016 for failing to provide a urine sample. Yeah. So he recorded audiobooks for the deaf and for children also. Over 5,000 audiobooks. Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how that was allowed.
I know.
Guess because of how, what term did you use earlier? Eloquent that he spoke. You know, he was
extremely eloquent.
He didn't sound like cornbread like we do.
No, okay? He didn't. He was extremely well spoken.
He was so clear. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, that part really just got with me when I found that out. Like, I couldn't believe it.
Right. And, I mean, why was he in charge of scheduling other inmates' appointments with psychiatrists?
That sounds sketchy, right?
I don't understand. They did it when he was 15 to 21, whenever he was in a Tuscadero mental hospital. They let him do it then. They let him do it whenever. After he had done all the things that he had done, they let him do it again when he got to prison.
Right. Like, I don't care that, you know, he was as smart as he is or whatever, you know. Yeah. I mean, he still killed 10 people. He shouldn't have any sort of influence on anybody.
Right. Right.
Yeah, in my opinion, anyways. Yeah. I mean.
Mm-hmm. So, this part was interesting to me. Kemper was first eligible for parole in 1979. Mind you, he had been convicted in 1973. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he came up for his first parole in 1979. That's 6 years. Why was he up for parole? They said seven to life. Okay. First of all, that's six. I don't know how y'all count, but in today's math, and I don't math, but I know 73 to 79 is 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he was up for his first parole in 1979. He was denied parole that year, as well as at his parole hearings in 1980, 1981. In 1982. He subsequently waived his right to a hearing in 1985. He was denied parole again in 1988, where he said, "Society is not ready in any shape or form for me. I can't fault them for that." He was denied parole again in 91 and in 94. He then waived his right to a hearing in 1997 and in 2002. He attended the next hearing in 2007, where he was again denied parole. Prosecutor Ariadne Simmons said, quote, "We don't care how much of a model prisoner he is because of the enormity of his crimes," end quote. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Kemper waived his right to a hearing again in 2012, and he was denied parole in 2017, and is next eligible in 2024.
Okay, so a couple things on that.
Sure.
So why was he up for parole so many times?
Because that's part of it. Whenever you get a sentence and you're only required to serve 7 to life, after that 7 year, or apparently before, because the first one was in 6 years, every so often you get brought up for parole. I mean, that's how that works. And that's right. What makes me crazy.
Yeah, like that doesn't make sense to me for him to go up for parole that many times.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally could be wrong about this, but in an interview somewhere, did he mention that he would rather stay in prison because of the fear that he would unleash upon humanity again, that he doesn't think that he could stop himself?
Yeah, I mean, and that's what he said. He said society is not ready in any shape or form for me. I mean, right. And they're not. So and he's not ready for society.
He's completely just upfront and saying, you know, that he would kill people, basically, or unalive people.
Yeah, he said, and, don't let me out.
Yeah, and yet here we are giving him opportunities to get out.
Right. Why would you even bring it up? Yeah, would you even bring it up? I don't understand. Yeah,
I think that's stupid. And how old is he now? He's like 70.
75.
Yeah.
He's 75 this year.
Mm-hmm. No, I think, you know, I don't care. He deserves it for all those people that he harmed and unalived and all the stuff that he did. I mean, that's not right. You should pay for that, you know. Right. And quite honestly, even though he did ask for the death penalty, I mean, he deserved to sit there every day. He doesn't deserve to be outside and roam.
No, absolutely. He doesn't.
You know.
So
there's your torture, sir.
Yeah. Might not be what you had in mind, but it works for us.
That would have been the easy way out. I'm sorry. I mean, that might be offensive to some people, but I mean, kill you and get it over with. No, like, you deserve to pay for the crimes. If you can't do the time, don't do the crime. Okay.
I agree. I've always been a supporter of the death penalty in some cases, not in all cases. In this one, I do agree with you as far as, excuse me. I believe he should have to pay. He should have to serve time and pay for what he did. Is it going to make anything he did any better? No. It's not. And I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence with the whole death penalty thing. Do I want him sitting in there sucking up, you know, taxpayer money? Not really. But then again, do I think that they should have to sit there and pay and think every day about what they did and why they're there and why they're having to suffer through the things that they're having to suffer through? Well, we
that
hope
part,
they're having to suffer anyway, because apparently he's not suffering too damn much considering he was able to set up appointments for other inmates. He was able to learn
like
how to make ceramic cups.
He's got it easy.
It sounds like he's got it made. You know what I'm saying?
It sounds like he's letting these people eat out of the palm of his hand.
Right. And, you know? I mean, is he really suffering?
He should have been, like, in solitary confinement.
They should have made it hard
most
for him.
For most of his sentence, because that's the only way I feel like when you're separated from everything and everybody, that you'll actually sit there and realize, and maybe he does realize, but doesn't care. I mean, you know, I don't know, but I just think that it would have been the cowardly way out just to say, oh, you know, unalive me because I've done this all, you know. No, like, you should sit there and you should realize this is not okay.
Right.
But
I don't understand why you're trying, why y'all are trying to give him the benefits that other people have, knowing that he's not going to be able to be rehabilitated because he told you he wasn't.
Right.
I mean, and with all the things that he's done, and he's actually sat there, been able to recite to you exactly what happened, why it happened, and all this and that. Do I think that he should be able to make audiobooks for children and blind people? No, I don't.
No.
Do I think he should be able to get there, be able to sit down and learn how to make ceramic cups? No, I don't want to drink out of one of them cups, and I don't want nobody else to either. That's fucking disgusting. But anyway, and that goes back to the I'm going to finish this right here, and then we can go into a little bit of a discussion. Kemper is still incarcerated in the Tuscadero Medical Facility. And as of this year, on December the 18th, he will be 75 years old. A lot of other podcasts and stuff like that that I've listened to, a lot of the research that I've done, they've given you a whole lot of background on where he was born, the things that he went through, his mom and dad's divorce, his sisters and the games that they used to play and all that kind of stuff, which gave a lot of insight onto his whole frame of mind back then, how his mom used to lock him in the basement, all that kind of stuff. If y'all want to read about that, you can go back and you can read about that. But the part that interested me most was the things that I have told y'all tonight. That was my way of telling the story, because I have a whole thing about whether a killer is born or a killer is made.
Yeah.
I have a huge question on whether it's nature or nurture. You've heard about that in our research and stuff like that. Are they born this way, or are they made this way through trauma, through abuse, through neglect, all that kind of stuff? I think it's different with each and every killer. I think it's different. I just do. Do I think that his mom was mean to him? Yes. But I think that there are a lot of people out there whose moms, dads, grandmas, grandpas, whoever is raising them at the time, whoever is the most influential person in their life, maybe they are mean to them. But they don't all turn out that way.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I didn't include a whole lot of his childhood and stuff like that. A lot of people think that makes a big difference. Maybe it does. I don't know. But the main thing that I wanted to do was I wanted to remember the girls that he did this to. The fact that he killed his mom and her best friend and stuff like that. I wanted to make sure that those girls and their family and their loved ones were never, they understand that they have never been forgotten. And because of what he went through, it doesn't make a damn difference as to what he did to them, to me. That's right. My opinion. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I told the story that I the way that I did tonight, and I hope that y'all understand where I was coming from with it. So what do you think, Shelby? I have this question for you. Okay. You tell me your opinion on the nature versus nurture situation. What do you think?
I do think that it influences differently. Just as I spoke before about how everyone's mind, it functions completely differently. The way that I think, the way that you think, the way that everybody else's mind thinks, it's wired differently, totally and completely differently. And that alone to me is interesting, because honestly,
yes, ma'am.
I got into a lot of arguments with my mom, especially as a teenage girl. I mean, I think we've all kind of been down that road before, you know, but I mean, I never wanted to lash out in any kind of angry rage or anything, you know. And no, she didn't treat me badly, anything like that, you know, but you get mad sometimes. And I think that some people may grow up in certain situations where they are maybe around violence a lot. And a lot of times they say that serial killers are brought up in childhood when they'll start like killing animals, or they'll start doing other things, you know, and they'll just progressively work their way up to a human, you know. And I think that that's just an experimental way for them to let out these urges, you know. And in some situations, they may not be in an abusive scenario.
Right.
It may be they feel different about themselves. They don't know who they are, and they struggle with fitting in. They struggle with appearance. They struggle with certain things, and it may be a sexual orientation thing or whatever. But I also think that that is how necrophilia is involved, because that they start experimenting with stuff like that. And that's why I thought Ed Kemper was so fascinating to me, because while he is very smart, he uses his narcissistic, manipulative manner and uses that to his advantage. But the only way he probably could get a sexual release is if he felt like he was powerful, you know? So I feel like there's a lot of things that go on to cause something like that to occur. I feel like it's a number of different things that happens. It may be, you know, you grow up and you are in a home full of violence, and you're just seeing this all the time. So you feel like that's normal. This is what life should be like.
Mm-hmm.
Or you grow up and it could be a fairly normal home, but yet you don't feel right with yourself. So maybe you get involved with the wrong crowd and then you start seeing what they're doing and then you try something for yourself and then you just like it. I think there's a lot that impacts or ignites what starts that fire.
Yeah. Well, as far as my research showed, there was not one time that he had sex with a person who was alive.
Yeah.
Like every single time, even the little 15-year-old girl he raped, he choked her, killed her, then raped her.
Yeah.
So there was not one time.
I think that has a lot to do with the power thing. Because he was so large,
mm-hmm.
that maybe that's the only way that he felt like he could ever get anywhere. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how his mind was functioning in that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
But that could have been, I mean, we all read stories all the time about how sick somebody's mind can be. And maybe that was just his thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that will never make sense to me. Like I said, that's probably one of the main things that gives me the ick is hearing about necrophilia. Like that is just that boggles my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will never understand how you go from one end of the spectrum to the complete other.
I just don't understand. I guess we don't understand these things because we don't have these
urges,
things that go on our head, and that we don't have these frames of mind and stuff like that. But I don't understand how it is that you want to, first off, kill somebody, but then secondly, kill somebody and then have sex with them. What? I don't. I'm going to tell you right now, it leaves me speechless because I just don't understand what you're getting from that. You know what I mean? I don't understand what part of you, I mean, and that's been many different serial killers who have,
mm-hmm.
I mean, some of them have actually had sex with the person, then killed them, then had sex with them again. But I don't get that part.
Mm-mm.
I don't get what you're getting out of being with somebody who is unalived. I just can't wrap my mind around that.
Right.
But as far as the nature versus nurture, do I think that some people are just born bad? I don't think they're born bad. They may have some wires that are not exactly wired correctly in their heads, and that may have something to do with it, because we know that mental health, mental illness and all that kind of stuff, we have found out over the years, not back in the early 1970s or anything like that, but we have come to find out in our day and age that there are a lot of people out there who are suffering with mental illness and things like that. And it is prevalent nowadays that people go to therapy, they're able to talk out, you know, what they're going through and things like that. But do I think some people are just wired? I'm not going to say wrong. I'm just going to say different. You know what I mean? Yes, I do.
Like a built to kill kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I just think that something ain't wired right up there. You know what I mean? That just makes them mean and evil people.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, on the flip side of that, think that there are a lot of people out here who are traumatized and treated in a way. A lot of them are able to come out of it, and thank God for that. But a lot of them aren't. And that's mm-hmm. their only way to be able to have some kind of release, like we were talking mm-hmm. about earlier. And God forbid, you know, that happens to anybody. But I believe that's sometimes the only way they know how to deal with it. Yeah. So do I believe it's a nature versus nurture thing? Yes, I do. That there are a lot of people, it's like I was talking about with them being wired differently and stuff. You had mentioned this earlier about there being several different things that they have found as far as serial killers and stuff like that. They have like almost like a gauge, like it's wet in the bed, it's torturing animals, it's setting mm-hmm. fires. I believe it's called the McDonald triad. I think that's what they call it. But a lot of serial killers, period, have been proven to actually have had those things happen mm-hmm. in their life, or a frontal lobe injury. Like they have had some kind of head injury. Mm-hmm.
That's why, like, in any kind of situation, like any TV show, any, you know, like First 48, anything like that, anything that can depict an investigator asking a loved one a question or potentially the victims, 9 times out of 10, the questions you will hear are going to revolve around their childhood or if they've had some sort of accident. And that's where it kind of comes from, is because they're building up to find out why it is that those acts happened, how they progressed to the extent that they had been, and pretty much what went wrong. What went wrong down the way, you know? And there are situations where those are not apparent in their childhood, you know, but I think that that does come along the way. And, you know, if you're influenced by other people or, you know, something like that, if you didn't do those things yourself. But normally, that's what they say happens.
Well, those are our opinions.
Yeah.
And that is the story of Ed Kemper. We'd really love to hear you guys' feedback on that. What do y'all think about as far as nature versus nurture? Did you enjoy the story on Kemper? Like I said, he was one of the most influential cases that I had first heard about for me back when I first started listening to true crime, many, many years ago. And got into podcasts and stuff like that. I was just fascinated by his story. So I hope you guys enjoyed it tonight. So,
Absolutely.
we are now going to progress into our normal banter. So if this is not something that you guys are interested in, we love y'all and we'll catch y'all later. Y'all, come be with us next week. But with that being said, so Shell, how's your week?
It's been okay. Got a lot of stuff moved out and everything. We're done with that apartment. So, yay.
Yeah. Yeah,
So
that's great.
now comes the unpacking, which is the even more fun part. Now I realize after packing and everything, I was like, gosh, I got a lot of stuff. And I don't even know where it came from. Like I looked through some of my things and I'm like, I bought this, th or this was given to me. Like why? You know, like I don't even know where it came from.
It's
So
just amazing the stuff that you collect. It really
I
is.
know. And like I was looking at my apartment, like it was pretty small. So I was like, oh no, there's not a lot. And it took like 4 trips to get everything. I'm like, this is a one bedroom apartment. Like, where did this stuff come from? But yeah, no, it's done now. So that's been fun.
Good.
But
Okay, good.
there's nothing really exciting other than that.
Yeah. Well, in case you guys didn't know, on my side of things, it's still hot.
Oh. Oh
It's
my gosh.
still hot. We had a storm come through Wednesday night. You had that. Did you guys get some of that?
Was it Wednesday?
No, it
I
was
don't
Tuesday.
remember.
It was Tuesday night.
Yeah, we got a storm this week, I know, but it wasn't as bad as last week. Last week we had one and it knocked our power out for hours.
So this one, I think we got the roughest side of it this week. It was Tuesday night, and I mean, the rain was sideways.
Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
it was awful for about an hour, but thank God we didn't. Our power, it blinked a few times, but it didn't go out and stay out, thank goodness.
That's
But
good.
after that, it has kind of relieved some of the humidity, because if y'all know anything about South Georgia, it's like walking out and you're instantly soaking ass wet. That's how it
Yes.
is here. This is what you learn to live with. But when the humidity is not quite as bad, it's not like you're dying every time you walk out the door.
Yeah.
So the humidity has eased up a little bit the last couple of days, which I've been thankful for. However, the temperature for this coming week on Wednesday is 100 degrees. So I love that for
Gross.
us. Yeah. I got to
Gross.
work tomorrow, which also sucks, but I'm going fishing Sunday, so I'm looking forward to that.
That sounds fun. We were right by a pond earlier and I was like, man, I wish it wasn't so hot. I like to go fishing. But I mean, it's way too hot. I can't sit out there. And I mean, honestly, when it's hot like it has been, they're not gonna be up at the top. They're gonna be at the very bottom where it's cool.
You are
Where
right
I would
about
probably be if
that.
I was a fish.
I mean, I don't, it doesn't matter if I catch anything. I mean, I like it. I love to catch fish, but just going out there riding on the water,
The
just having some peace for a little while.
ambiance.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes.
Oh
So I'm
yeah.
looking
It's
forward
so
to that.
nice. I love it. But
But so yeah, that's how my week has been. So, with that being said, do you have any book recommendations? Have you watched anything on TV? Anything?
So I actually finished. So I'm on a kick of where I love to binge watch shows. And I finished binge watching The OC. And I'm a sucker for like the teen drama stuff. Like I hate it and love it. It's a love-hate relationship. But that one was pretty interesting. Although I will say it kind of seemed like it was rushed in the last season, but neither here nor there. So I actually started Gilmore Girls. Fun fact, I never watched Gilmore Girls.
I've never seen it, but I've heard good things.
And it was funny because the episode I watched earlier today, the grandma asked the little girl, was like, "So do you like NSYNC or 98 Degrees better?" And so why I thought that was so funny is I've been seeing a lot on TikTok. People are talking that there may be an NSYNC Backstreet Boys tour next year. And I just want y'all to know I'm going to be front row and center if I can. I will sell my whole kidney if I have to. I take both of them. I mean, I will be
Okay.
there. Listen, and I've seen 98 Degrees too. So I've seen a lot of the 90s boy bands.
I'm going to give y'all a little bit of insight onto my age right now. I have heard of NSYNC. Don't know nothing about 98 Degrees. What are you talking about?
Really? Really?
Yes, girl. I'm more of the Motley Crue, Poison kind of era.
Well, see, I love stuff like that too, but I can't help but love the 90s boy bands. Although the battle is normally between NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, I'm a New Kids on the Block girl.
So
I
let me
love
ask a
it.
question. Let me show you just how dumb I am. Who did Marky Mark sing with?
New Kids.
Okay, so I'm a New Kids
Yeah.
girl because Mark
So,
Wahlberg could have
Mark.
my babies.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mark is the brother of Donnie, and
Donnie, that's it. Yeah.
Donnie's one of the members of New Kids. So,
Okay,
but they
so I'm
only
a
had like one hit single with Marky Mark, and then they're like, "Yeah, you got to
yeah.
go."
That's the only one
You're
I care about.
pretty much better off as acting. So,
Yeah, that's the only one I care about.
but yeah, no, I like the boy bands.
Yeah. Well, if
I
they
think I'm
come back,
stuck in. I think
yeah.
I'm stuck in the 90s era, literally. Like, I love it so much.
Yeah. Well, I hope if they come back, baby, I hope you get to see every one
Oh,
of
I'm gonna be there. My
them.
parents
With kidneys and
literally,
all.
oh yeah, my parents literally thought that I was crazy a couple years ago when I found out that New Kids was coming to Atlanta, and I was like, I'm going to be there. And I think the front row ticket was like $1,200. Like, I did not care. I don't care. No, I'm going because that's a once in a lifetime experience, especially for me. They're getting old. Like, they're
Did
not
you
going to be
go?
performing long. Yeah, I went.
She's like, yeah.
I only paid like $400 for two tickets, but let me tell you, I could taste. That sounds really nasty, but Donnie's sweat. They walked right by me, and it was the greatest experience of my life.
Okay, well, now we know.
I love Donnie and oh my God, how did I just forget his name? I just got so excited, but yeah, they all walked by me.
Excitement washed over you.
It did, it did. But yeah, that was literally like the greatest night ever. I was like on the floor. Salt and Pepper was there.
Oh, I love Salt and Pepper now.
Rick Astley was there.
Don't know who that is.
Never gonna give you up.
Okay, I like that. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was there, and that's the only song I know by him. I think that's literally what everybody just knows by him. But he sang like two or three other songs.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was literally. Oh, his name is Danny. Duh, Donnie and Danny.
Okay. Are they Wahlbergs?
No, it's Donnie Wahlberg and Danny Wood. They're
Oh, okay.
my favorites in New Kids. Then you have Jonathan and Joey. And one, two, three, four. Is that it? Or is there five? I
It
think.
was Marky, but he's gone.
Yeah.
Okay. All
But yeah.
right. Well, that's a little insight into
Yeah.
our lives.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, haven't really been watching anything. Did a whole lot of research. I've been trying to get started this new series. Let's talk some trash on TikTok. So y'all join me there. But every time I seem to put up a video, they want to violate me with community guidelines or whatever kind of bullshit that is. But it's fine. I'm learning how to use different language so that maybe the videos can
you
stay.
Have to say unalive and stuff
apparently
like yeah
they told me I was bullying. Look, I did the first video of like the premiere video of Let's Talk Some Trash, and they told me I was using bullying. I might bully my friends, but I'm just reading to y'all off the damn internet. I don't know what you're talking about. And then they wouldn't give me my video back. And then they wouldn't explain what words that I was using. So you know what? They can suck it. But anyway, so I'll use new words. So
it be like that.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so all right, guys. Well, that's our episode for tonight. Please subscribe, review, do all the things. Come and see us on TikTok. Come and join our Facebook group. please subscribe on Buzzsprout and join our Patreon, Murders and Monsters. Patreon/Murders and Monsters. Come and join us. We got some really just off the cuff shit. Some, what do you call them, Shelby? Intrusive thoughts.
Intrusive thoughts. It's yeah. Where, so how I just had like the squirrel moment earlier when I was like, oh, his name is, you know, yeah. So we let those just kind of slip out. We just say whatever comes out.
Yeah, we just flow with it. And it's really fun. You guys should come join us on Patreon. But we love you guys. We really appreciate your support. And we still have merch. I will do another video this week and put some more merch up there and just let y'all see what we got. Our girl is on a little bit of a sabbatical, Barbara. Excuse me. I told her just to hold up a little bit until we could get everything situated. So she's still got our ideas and she's still making more things. So, but anyway, you guys get you some merch, review, subscribe, rate, all those kind of things. But we love you guys and thanks for joining us this week. Monsters do exist.
Don't be a victim.
Bye, guys.